This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 13th of April, 2023. Getting a delayed start this morning. Plenty of distractions. So you and I have had this morning, Peter, long meetings, etc. But really much to do about not much yesterday in the CPI. That was the key headline, I guess, the takeaway. Market was really trying to do something here when there wasn't much to go on. We did see a slightly softer CPI headline print. We'll get to some of the particulars that were behind that slightly softer print. But the core is still very sticky at those levels, but those levels were expected. So there was the reaction function was a bit odd. We saw a sudden dump in Treasury yields, and that rally in Treasuries driving the equity market higher. But both of those moves mostly erased, a little bit less so in Treasuries than the equity market. So in the end, we're kind of back to where we came from, a little bit lower in the case of the NASDAQ 100, actually close to a multi-week low there on the close, but not really anything to write home about in the S&P 500, still stuck in the range here.
Yeah, very much so. And I think we all were just waiting to get a more clear picture on where this economy is going. As we talked about in our internal call, John, it's a 50-50 call on whether we get a recession or not. And I think it's just too early. There are too many variables at play. And we'll talk a little bit about China later in my stocks to watch, because we've got some interesting bits from LVMH. And then we had the export data coming out of China suggesting that there is a pickup in China. That's not something that is really feeding through to the equity sentiment overall. And if you look at the Chinese consumer and technology theme basket we have months to date, doesn't look very impressive at all. And we also had some interesting news coming out from Alibaba that it continued to weigh down on that sector. But if we look at the months to date, I think, you know, two of the themes that we really like, because it's part of the three pillars, I think, in the equity market in the fragmentation game, it's commodities and then defense. And defense and commodities are definitely two themes that are very strong. They have, I suspect them to be still a very long-term positive trend there. So they have had a good month. But otherwise, I think it's onto the inflation report in the nitty-gritty details, John, because you have highlighted here on slide three some interesting takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you talk about energy and you talk about commodities, and we've seen a big jump in oil prices here and a further surge yesterday. So essentially a breakout. There are some residual little range levels from further back that have not been broken, but we need to have energy on our radar as a potential re-aggravator of the inflation story. Meanwhile, the March figures showing how much energy is really dragged on those year-on-year levels. Look at that, the upper box there on slide three, the whole energy complex, minus 6.4% year-on-year, minus 3.5% alone in March. And a couple of those things like gasoline down 17%. Of course, year-on-year comparisons, this is, we're talking about right sort of the peak reaction to Russia's invasion of Ukraine that was happening in March of a year ago. But it also means that we're going to be bringing down the basing effects, so that if we do get a further extension of the rally in crude oil, it starts to pull back up the inflation figures, at least for the headline initially. And then stuff like gas down 8% in February and minus 7% in March, still up 5.5% year on year, despite the fact that it's practically free at $2 for the front contract in the U.S. There's only upside if you look beyond the near couple of months for natural gas. Used cars and trucks, minus 11%, you know, dragging on these figures once again, even though locally speaking, I've seen some indicators showing that used cars and trucks are rising quite rapidly month on month. Some of that is seasonal, however, and that might be a seasonal adjustment. But overall, the core stuff is still ticking along at this 5%-ish annualized rate.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting noting the resiliency of food prices, given that the United Nations Food Index has come down quite substantially from the recent peak, but you still see in these data points here the month-on-month gains are positive all the way through in the past 6 months. And then also note electricity. As I said to you, John, you in our internal call, you almost daily give me these fun points or fun informations on the electric vehicle. Oh, did you see how much EVs that were sold in Denmark this month and now in the US? And it's just from the ramp up. I mean, you and I talk a lot about that because we're interested in it, and also the technology with batteries and all that. But I just have this feeling that it seems like we can produce electricity consuming units faster than potentially we can set up supply of electricity. And I just wonder whether we're galloping towards some electricity crisis at one point if this EV continues at this blistering pace, because it requires enormous infrastructure investments in the electric grid, charging networks, and even more importantly, production of electricity. Yeah. And we want to do it green, which makes it even more complicated, I think.
Yeah, it's expensive stuff, electrification. And, you know, I actually said 5% clip for the core stuff. It's actually 5.5%+ clip. I should just revise what I said there. But you've got some thoughts as well on inflation on slide 4 there.
Yeah, because there are so many different ways you can look at the core. And I think, I can't remember her name. She's a leading strategist at BlackRock. I think she was right on the ball yesterday, saying that this was actually a hawkish inflation print. I mean, it is getting sticky. And Steen also mentioned in our internal call what is called the super core part of the index, which is provided by one of the regional Fed central banks, said that that is around, was it 5%? And this one, the U.S. services CPI index, which is almost 60% of the CPI basket here, I have excluded energy. And this one is sitting at 6.5%. If you take the six-month average of the month-on-month gains in this index and then you analyze it, of course, it will come down. In some of my presentations, I've put in an area in red, somewhere between 4 and 5%. And then with the question mark, is this going to be the sticky part? And I think, John, not that we should go on and on with inflation, but I think the crucial part of all of this and where we end up in terms of level comes back to the dynamics of wages, right? So wage negotiations always come with a lag to realized inflation, and that in itself creates another lag in the economy, because right now a lot of employees are looking at the inflation and said, okay, I'm down now 7, 8, 9%.
In real terms.
I need to get as much as possible in wages. Depending on how much they get in wages, then they can keep up their demand, they can keep up their consumption, and then we move along. And then when the next year, inflation is not 2%, as a lot of economists are projecting, but it's maybe 4 or 5%. And then you're still behind because you were not fully compensated in the first year. And then you got more inflation of 4 or 5%, and you need to get back to where you started. And that's what I worry about, that whether we'll have, just like in the 70s, some kind of a positive feedback loop because of these lagging effects.
Yeah, and the frustration, as you indicate, the market wants to, you look at that forward Fed curve, so that was not really adjusted materially at all by the market after yesterday's CPI print. We took maybe 2 basis points out of, or a couple of percentage points out of the probabilities and a couple of basis points out of the market pricing for the May and June Fed meetings. Still looking for that rollover and cuts, certainly by September from you know, and 65 basis points lower from peak by December. So what if we just kind of grind along and there's nothing to give you the conviction in that outcome? But anyway, roll towards the FX. It seems to be the case here that the dollar can go lower, because the only thing that will support the dollar is A, clear signs that we are seeing a reheating of inflation, and maybe growth is even picking up again, and we're going to reheat the whole U.S. Treasury yield curve and Fed expectations again. That's not happening right near. That's going to be a bit of a high bar to get enough data to you know, put that scenario into motion. And I don't think we're going to get on the growth side. We may not get a recession immediately, but I don't think we're going to get a massive reacceleration of growth. Or we have to see this recession playbook that people seem to think is coming hard and fast, and having some really bad news on the economy, and that bad news playing as bad news, not playing as hooray for impending Fed cuts. Traditionally, that is the kind of situation that supports the U.S. dollar as well. If we get this sort of meandering course for sentiment, fairly stable sentiment, yields going nowhere, it really feeds into dollar weakness, it seems. And we're crossing some key levels here. Eurodollar crossing above 110. There's only one little time that it crossed above 110 intraday since all the way back almost exactly a year ago. And then something like cable, so sterling versus the dollar hitting 125+. That's a key chart area as well. Dollar Canada, despite the Bank of Canada holding and sort of trying to push back against the notion that it's going to cut yesterday, it is still holding. It's holding at 4.5%. It's not expected to hike anymore, even though it reserves that right in its forward guidance. But with these oil prices up, Dollar Canada is pushing down into really important areas down towards the 134 level. So that sort of broad sense that the dollar might be breaking down here could lead to a couple 3% further travel, I think, room for travel. And then the theme, I think, also supported by the precious metals market. We haven't yet peaked above the we haven't pushed above the peak of 2032 on the gold dollar spot price, but watch for that one as a further confirmation of this story. All right, we have a couple of interesting equity stories. You alluded to a couple of them earlier in your roundup of the market action, Peter, but I'll let you take us through what you're looking at there on slide six.
Yeah, I think Louis Vuitton, LVMH, the largest luxury fashion group in the entire world.
And a bloody massive company. I mean, some people don't realize how big this thing has gotten.
It's the second.
Pushing close to $500 billion market cap.
Yeah, exactly. And I know the Arnault family is the richest family in Europe because of this. And it's the expectation was for a Q1 organic growth rate in the, what they call the fashion and leather segment of almost 10%. They delivered 18%. And on the conference call, I mean, the CFO sounded like there was, he was super bullish. I mean, he used a word, I am extremely optimistic about China this year based on the figures they're seeing. I know that this is not, you know, a broad-based indicator on China. This is very much, you know, luxury. It's very expensive. So it's part of the upper class of China that, of course, is responding to that. And it's really Asia and in particular China that are driving the numbers right now for Louis Vuitton. So I think this proves that the market was right in using and applying the European luxury industry as a proxy for the Chinese reopening.
Yeah, I was just going to say the reopening has to be a key element of that. Obviously, people getting out and about. International travel up 300% in a few months in China from very low levels, still down something like 80%+ from pre-pandemic levels. But just think of the potential for further upside if it's linked to travel. I mean, there are, of course, the ability to consume some of this within China.
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe a more broader take on the economy and certainly a company that is linked to manufacturing and industrial production, not only in Europe, but also more widely in global and also in China. BASF, Germany's largest chemical company, the shares last time I checked was up 1%. They beat on their operating income. They're doing a lot of cost cutting. They're doing a lot of things to be more efficient at a higher energy level or energy cost level. But the sales forecast was a little bit below the estimates, but it's not really something to worry about. So I would say overall a positive vibe there for Germany's largest chemical maker. And maybe, you know, bolstering this argument that we'll just tag along and we won't slip into a recession. We might be, you know, having, you know, some months where the growth is slowing down, but then we can come back. And I think really China could be the big joker this year. And then Tesco, they are cutting their dividend almost 10%. And they really facing a lot of headwinds from inflation. They talk about it again in this fiscal year result that they just delivered, and they say it will be very difficult for them to increase profits in the current fiscal year because of the inflation pressures, and they're doing everything they can to shield as many UK customers as possible from the full brunt of the inflation by keeping prices flat or not raising them on a lot of necessary items, that they call it. I think they have 1,100 items in that category. And then Alibaba, obviously being one of the large technology companies in China, shares were down 5% at one point. It recovered somewhat from the intraday lows, and it was down 3%, getting closer to the close in Hong Kong. And that's because SoftBank, which already sold almost $30 billion worth of shares last year, have sold $7 billion this year and basically indicated that they're moving closer to the day where they will sell the last shares they have in Alibaba and just quit it altogether. And I think it really echoes a lot of the considerations in among foreign investors, non-Chinese investors, about to what extent, if we want to have exposure to China, how do we do it? Do we want to have direct exposure in the companies themselves, or is a better way to do it via luxury? That's the big question. And then we talk about earnings watch, John. You mentioned the big pickup in traveling out of China. There's still a considerable pickup in traveling as well in the U.S., still having these lacking effects from the reopening also as well in the U.S. society, although it happened over a year ago. And you see Delta Airlines expected to report today before the market opens for their Q1 revenue growth at plus 20%. Year-over-year, very impressive there. Profitability is coming back from this airliner, and profitability is expected to dramatically improve in the coming quarters because something like jet fuel costs have come down because of the lower energy cost overall. So that's I'm just very curious to hear what Delta Airlines says about what they're seeing, not only business traveling, but also just leisure traveling. My own sense is that it's going pretty strong, and potentially I think those revenue growth figures you can see here on slide 7 in the insert might prove to be too low. So maybe there is a positive upside surprise there for Delta Airlines. And then it's the big three financials, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup reporting tomorrow. I will be writing after this podcast a preview of the US banking sector and what to expect. I think it's a very difficult topic. A lot of the banks have not really been saying much during the banking crisis. That's how things are. They need to, you know, play this confidence game. But when we get the Q1 numbers, they will have to address and show the balance sheet and show what happened during Q1. And then I think we'll begin to see whether new cracks will emerge, because as Jamie Dimon said in his shareholder letter, you know, this banking crisis is not over, but we're sort of waiting for the next shoe to drop. And I think potentially that could be in the Q1 banking earnings. But the three major ones here should have had a decent Q1 quarter, I think, on the earnings side of things.
There'll also be the contrast between those and the smaller banks that are nonetheless listed banks, and contrasting what they're saying versus what these huge banks are saying. There has to be some sort of discrepancy there. But yeah, it's particularly interesting for JP Morgan after Jamie Dimon's a rather sort of dour discussion in that letter. All right, there's almost nothing to discuss on the macro calendar for today. We do have PPI figures out of the U.S., and we have the latest natural gas storage change with this incredibly difficult investment environment for natural gas traders. You have that really unbelievably contango forward curve. So with every future month, the price is significantly higher, because we know that this is a very cheap natural gas price, but trading that is very difficult when you have a market in strong contango. The front month can go almost anywhere before the prices begin to rise. There was a fairly weak U.S. 10-year Treasury auction yesterday that brought about some of the sort of stability in yields after they tried to dip in reaction to that CPI figure, which we thought was unfair anyway, that the yields tried to dip on that. And we have a 30-year today, and 30-year quite interesting because it's so far out the curve. So what is the confidence in the real yield you're getting from a 30-year Treasury bond? And then the final highlight of the week will be tomorrow's U.S. March retail sales. These have been volatile of late. I think there's some seasonality factors in some of the early parts of the year that are a bit tricky, and there's some seasonality, and that should be fading out once we get into these March retail sales. So that one will be worth watching, as well as the first April sentiment figure for the University of Michigan. All right, let's see where this market heads. We saw some pump and dump yesterday. We might have had some zero days to expire options shenanigans driving some of that intraday volatility, cleared in reaction to the March CPI data. We're clear of that now. Let's see what the next move is. We're still bottled up in a pretty tight range. And the dollar, however, is declining and doing its part in supporting risk sentiment here. But we'll see where things stand, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.